Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order. The Eastern Conference Finals begin on Tuesday, and on this Monday, we've got a crossover episode with the Locked On Heat. Miller, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
Hi there, this is John Corrales, Mass Live, Boston Celtics beat reporter, host of this here Locked On Celtics podcast. If you're new to the show, thank you for checking it out. Really appreciate you downloading, giving it a shot. The rest of you who have listened on a daily basis, this is a Monday through Friday podcast. Thanks for coming back for another week. We had a bonus episode on Saturday. It's the playoffs. Everybody's got to try to step up their game. I'm going to try to step up mine. So thanks for subscribing if you haven't done that already. Thanks for the good written reviews and the five-star ratings. Today, we're going to do a crossover episode. Locked On Heat host Dave Vermill, who's also one of the hosts on the Tuesday Locked On NBA show. Good guy, friend of mine, covers the Miami Heat. And we get into a nice long conversation about what we might expect in this series, some of the matchups and all of that. So without further ado, let's get to it. It's me, Dave Vermill.
John, went through a seven-game grueling series against the Toronto Raptors. The Heat have been off for a while. It's been a little different. How much of the Heat-Bucks matchup did you catch, and what were your takeaways of that series?
You know, I tried to catch as much as I can while I was working. I thought, you know, the Heat did exactly what the matchups told us they were going to do. Like, they exploited that Bucks defense, took advantage of the things that the Bucks defense gives up, and they happen to be what Miami's strengths are, right? So that shooting is a problem for anybody. And they did a great job of walling off Antetokounmpo and making it difficult for the rest of their team. It just goes to show that Miami, and I'm like pouring through the numbers, the playoff numbers, Miami has become one of the best offensive and one of the better defensive teams in the league since the restart, since the playoffs started. And they showed that.
Yeah, that I think has been the most surprising turnaround. We saw from Miami, at least prior to the hiatus, that they were really struggling defensively. They had some injury issues, and then they were incorporating new personnel and things of that sort. But overall, they just gave up big leads. They just fell apart. At some point during the game, they were almost guaranteed to blow a lead. And a lot of that fell on the defensive just inefficiency that they were displaying prior to the hiatus. Then in the seeding games, we kind of saw them ratchet it up, but then they had some injuries as well. In the playoffs, they've been phenomenal. Now, I do have to say, and this kind of ties into another question I had, because Paul Pierce may have mentioned that Miami was not really tested in the playoffs going into the Eastern Conference Finals. And that was before Boston was able to advance versus Toronto. And I think that's a fair assessment. And I know that Heat fans probably don't want to hear this, but my feeling is that, look, they went against an undermanned Indiana team. They were facing a team in Milwaukee that they were specifically built to contend against. And then they were also dealing with Adetokounmpo's injury. So now we're going up against a Celtics team that's at full strength for the most part. Obviously, they're still missing Gordon Hayward, but overall, they're still stronger. They're much deeper, and I think sufficiently, I mean, much, much better than any of the other two teams that Miami has faced so far. So what's your takeaway on Paul Pierce's theory and Miami having been challenged up to this point so far?
I mean, it's hard for me to say that they weren't challenged by Milwaukee to some degree.
Five game series. It didn't look it.
That, I mean, it's hard to believe still that it was that easy. They definitely took advantage of a lot of Milwaukee's flaws. This is definitely going to be the hardest series. It's also the Eastern Conference Finals. It's supposed to be the hardest series that you face. So, but you know, if there are any things working against the Heat, it's almost like what was working against Toronto in game one when Toronto came in and wasn't really prepared for what the Celtics brought. It's almost like in baseball when, you know, you got a junk ball pitcher coming in, all of a sudden the next guy, you bring in a reliever that throws, you know, a hot fastball, and you're like, oh, okay, that's right. This guy can throw 90 miles an hour. Like, right. This may be a little bit of a shock, but Miami is very well coached, very well prepared. Any shock that they might get won't last very long. They'll recover, I think, pretty well. And I think that Miami, and there's a good point that came up on the Celtics call on Sunday afternoon. Miami picked up Crowder and Iguodala. And when it happened at the trade deadline, I wasn't sure how it would work out. But because of the hiatus, because they had time to have a sort of second training camp, they had time to integrate these guys rather than try to adjust on the fly.
Yeah.
And now they have they have an advantage of being a team the Celtics haven't faced. The Celtics did well against Miami earlier this year, but Jay Crowder, I think, is a huge turning point in this series. He's a huge key. Iguodala is a big key in this series, and they've had time, a lot of time now, to work together, to figure out how to play together. It's allowed Spoelstra to play different lineups, play Bam at the five. This is a new Miami team. So whatever disadvantage you might want to drum up for them in the playoffs, they also have advantages over the Celtics that didn't exist before, and they've only had one seeding game against each other. So the Celtics are learning on the fly as well, and they're going to have to, like, really this is going to be like a boxing match where the first half of this game, maybe all of game one, is going to be a lot of feeling out and figuring things out and trying to figure out what adjustments can be made to, like, win games later in the series.
That's a great point. And I think, like, a lot of my concern about Miami's ability to challenge Boston was based on how badly they played against them during the regular season prior to the hiatus. But, I mean, you do bring up a good point. This is a very different version from that. And Crowder's emergence has certainly been a factor. Obviously, allowing him to start and then having Bam switch over to the five, that takes Myers Leonard, perhaps one of our weakest defensive players, out of the rotation altogether. They've made some additional changes, however, with Kendrick Nunn out of the lineup. So, this is a very, very different version of the Heat than what Boston has seen. What's the status with Gordon Hayward? I know he's mm-hmm. he's out of quarantine, or is he available? He's not available to play.
He's not available to play yet, but he's out of quarantine. He on Sunday, Brad Stevens said Hayward went through some light drills, nothing full speed with the team, was doing some individual work after practice. So he's slowly advancing, and Stevens said that he is expected to return at some point in the series, but wouldn't say when it would be. So, yeah. I mean, that's a big deal. And the fact that the Celtics got through the Toronto series without Hayward is huge. And let's not forget, like, the extra few days that we got with the protests, the boycotts, that added what, 3-4 days to the schedule. If that's the difference between Hayward coming back in, say, game three versus Hayward coming back in a game six or a game seven. Now the Celtics can have a guy that can get into the middle of the Miami zone and facilitate from the middle of that zone. He plays very well in those situations. He can shoot over the top of it. He can drive and attack and dish. So that's something in this series that is going to be very, very different for the Celtics, because they only had him for one playoff game.
Dave and I will continue our conversation in just a moment. It's a tough conversation to have if you're trying to talk to somebody about erectile dysfunction. It's not an easy thing to talk about. A lot of times, guys, you just brush it off. You say things like, I've lost my mojo, I've had a long day at work. It's not very comfortable, but it's easy to talk about it with Roman. You get a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication simply, safely, totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan, and if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. To get started, just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today. Erection dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today and connect with an online healthcare professional to take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today, and if approved, you'll get $15 off your next order for ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify.
How does he change their rotation? I mean, obviously he's been coming off the bench, but is that throw anything off? I mean, we've seen Kemba Walker already struggle to some degree. Jason Tatum has been a little off offensively. Does Hayward's impact, is that obviously, I mean, he always wanted an extra body or a guy as capable as him of being able to come off the bench and make a positive impact, but how does it throw off any of the other guys, particularly in that starting group?
Well, I would say that if he, depending on how he feels, like if they need to limit his minutes, maybe they bring him off the bench, but if he's back, if he's healthy, then I think they start him and move Marcus Smart back to the bench. And okay. They will go with Marcus Smart, coming in for Kemba Walker to give them another facilitator instead of Brad Wanamaker coming in off the bench. You have Marcus Smart, so you basically eliminate Brad Wanamaker minutes for the most part, or severely limit Brad Wanamaker minutes, and that's going to be huge because if you have, first of all, you add some length to the starting lineup. Because Hayward's, you got a few inches on Smart, but then you bring a first team all defense guy off the bench, and that can really help with some of Miami's shooting, and adds another defender. If Hayward can move laterally and is not limited by his ankle injury, that's just one more defender that you can get in there and get up on the shooters. And you could also try playing small and have Hayward kind of defend Adebayo and see if he can hang with that small lineup. He cannot. But I think it'd be worth a shot. Like if they want to try it, then Hayward's a good defender.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I'd rather have Hayward in there with Marcus Smart coming off the bench or some combination of that, rather than having to rely on Semi Ojeleye, Brad Wanamaker, or those guys.
I mean, that's a good point. I kind of want to get into that a little bit because I thought Marcus Smart was going to be a huge X factor in that starting lineup, which, obviously he's still projected to be in, assuming that Hayward's not available until game 3 or 4. My feeling was that Marcus Smart was a huge benefit to Boston being in that starting lineup, specifically because now we've got Goran Dragic coming off the bench. Starting from Miami, and he's been such a huge factor. So my feeling was that Smart would probably try to defend Dragic and have maybe Walker, who is typically a weaker defender, maybe try and cover Duncan Robinson to some degree. How did you see that kind of, defensive matchup taking place there? Because if he's coming off the bench now, that allows, if you're going to put Walker on Dragic, then he's going to torch Boston early on. Now, similarly, I think that plays both ways, where Walker now has a huge advantage from what he had in the Toronto series, and he's absolutely going to be a much more dangerous threat. At least I think he's going to be into getting much more of a rhythm than he was against Toronto, and obviously you have to credit Kyle Lowry for his defensive job on Walker. But how do you see that playing out? Because to me, I thought it would be great for Boston to have him in the starting lineup.
Well, I don't think that Brad Stevens wants to go away from things that have worked.
Sure.
So, the Celtics with the Celtics starting lineup is Gordon Hayward with Kemba, Jalen, Jason, and Daniel Tice. However, it's the playoffs, and if Gordon's not going to be back right away, so you will see Marcus Smart starting. And if you look at the if you look at the Miami starting lineup, and Brad says, you know what, I do want to have that, what you just said, Marcus Smart on Goran Dragic, and bring Hayward off the bench, and if that's, if that works in, say, game one and two, if the Celtics take, if it's a 1-1 series, or if the Celtics happen to take a 2-0 lead, then he might just say, look, this is working. Now let's just upgrade our bench. Gordon, you're going to come off the bench for us. And I'm certain that, that that's something that he's going to discuss. And right. And you can just do it in the guise of, we don't want to tax the ankle too much. We're here, this works, the starting lineup works. And now, instead of bringing in Brad Wanamaker, you bring in Gordon Hayward, and then great. But if you want to do it a different way, then you have that option. I don't know that Kemba Walker on Duncan Robinson is going to be the best idea, because Duncan Robinson can shoot over the top of him. So there's going to have to be some allowance for Kemba's defense somehow, some way. So how do you do that? They're just going to have to take advantage of their defensive versatility. And now that's why Gordon Hayward becomes an option, because he's Duncan Robinson's height, and he can switch onto a lot more, and he can cover a lot more. And I think having a guy like Hayward in there, again, for what he can do on the offensive side, in both sides of the ball, I definitely think there's a strong possibility that he just returns to the starting lineup. But of course, if things are going well for the Celtics, then I don't think that Brad Stevens is going to sit there and be like, I want to change it just to change it, because that's how we've always done it. If something works, then he's going to want to win that series.
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, with Hayward still coming back from injury, and you have to expect that he's going to be dealing with some issues as far as wind and overall fatigue and things of that sort. Chasing Robinson around multiple screens is going to be so difficult. Look, we saw it from Chris Middleton in the Milwaukee series, where he was defending Duncan in the first half, and then by the second half he would really taper off, particularly in the first games of the series. And then he kind of, as his minutes got pushed more and more without Adekunpa out of the lineup, somehow he wound up getting more and more energy and being able to contain. And Robinson just wasn't getting a lot of space. They did a great job of limiting what Robinson could do. I asked Spoelstra about that today. And I think they're going to try to do more to get Robinson going early on. So I think he's going to present a challenge anyway. So that's an interesting defensive matchup for Boston. Who, considering that Hayward's going to be out, who do you think starts off guarding Robinson, and who's best equipped to chase him after those multiple screens?
Well, I think it would be Smart. I think the Celtics are just going to switch. I don't think that they're going to be chasing through a ton of screens. That doesn't really make sense for the Celtics to expend that much energy chasing him all over the place. I think there's going to be a significant amount of switching. So without Hayward, Marcus Smart will probably start on him, and there'll just be a lot of switching and a lot of covering for one another. And this way they can, instead of fighting through pick after pick after pick and then getting lost and giving up giving up three pointers, I think the switching will allow for these guys to make it, Duncan Robinson can just keep running and running in circles. And they're just going to still try to make it hard enough for him to catch it. The Celtics don't have to play man to man and chase all the time, because they've got, three guys on the floor that are about the same size, between 6'7 and 6'9, and two guys that are pretty quick. And obviously Kemba Walker, even with his quickness, is small, and he's the guy that they're going to target. But if the Celtics play that connected style of defense, they can cover for one another, and Kemba can at least be a pest. And if he goes up against a bigger guy, he can at least jab and get his hands in there and make ball handling a little tough. So I don't think it matters who starts on Duncan Robinson. I think it's just going to be a significant amount of switching and covering for one another. And you're just going to see they're going to see everybody cover everybody.
Is that work with the dribble handoff that he's been able to run so effectively with Bam? Because I don't think that was part of the offensive repertoire during the early part of the season when they faced each other. But now it's just become such a deadly part of, of what makes Duncan so special, his ability to kind of work that pick and roll with that dribble handoff with Bam so effectively, where he just, I mean, that seems like it would take out a Boston defender, especially if they have to kind of go under or over screens like that.
Dave and I will finish up our conversation in just a moment. I've been telling you all about Built Bar. I have one really every day. I just got myself the peanut butter ones. They're great. They taste great. And they're good for me. But you don't just have to get peanut butter if you don't want. There are 18 amazing flavors to choose from. 12 of the originals, 6 new ones, among them lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. If you've got a nut allergy, there are non-nut flavors. There's plenty of option. They're soft, they're easy to chew, they're covered in 100% chocolate, they taste like a candy bar, but they're healthy like a protein bar. So if you're looking to lose or maintain weight, you can still indulge in a Built Bar. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They're great if you're on a keto diet, and you can get them right now at BuiltBar.com for $10 off if you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to get $10 off your next order. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at LOCKEDON Celtics on Instagram.
Brad Stevens specifically referenced the dribble handoff in gushing about Miami. In his media availability, that's a hard thing to guard, because what do you do? Do you go under? You're not going to go under on Duncan Robinson. Do you go over? You go over the top. Then I think your goal is to chase him off the 3-point line. But if you're too aggressive in following him over the top, then he just stops and pops and gets a foul on the 3-pointer. I mean, that's what's made the dribble handoff more than the pick and roll. The dribble handoff has become one of the most impossible things to guard, because players have gotten so good at feeling the guy coming over the top and pulling up and getting these 4-point plays. We have never seen so many 4-point plays in my life. Yeah. So that's going to be hard. You're going to have to come over the top, and you're going to have to try to chase him without fouling, and try to contest from behind, which is something that is becoming a bigger a defensive strategy. Learning how to contest a shot from behind and not fouling. And then hopefully if you can run him off the 3-point line, you can get him dribbling into those long twos. But that's going to be hard to guard. I don't know how you do that. I really don't know how you do that. You have to, I guess, hug up on Duncan Robinson, maybe blitz him on the handoff, and then behind him, understand that when they're running that DHO with Bam, that Bam has the ability to keep it instead of handing off and then attack the rim himself. So you have to be able to rotate behind him. And that means whoever has blitzed Duncan Robinson, you can only do it for so long. You have to, like, once he gets rid of the ball, you have to find the open man and sprint across the court. It's a very difficult thing to defend. And it's especially difficult to defend with the Miami Heat.
Yeah, and no doubt, because then even when he's not effective like he was in the Milwaukee series, then you've got everybody else kind of back cutting, constant motion on offense, and that makes things so difficult. That's definitely a much different wrinkle than what you saw in Toronto. And I think Miami just does a really good job of constantly moving. And Robinson as a decoy is so effective because he's such a danger to have one of those big shooting nights where he goes 7 of 8 or 6 of 10 or something like along those lines. He can really, I mean, there's almost always a guarantee that he's going to go off at least for one game. So even if he's defended as well as you expect him to be in the series, there's probably a good chance where he's going to at least have a big explosion from offense on the perimeter. And he's done a very good job of incorporating a lot more drives to the hoop to kind of throw off. If that seam is there, he can find it. He's a lot better, and he can make plays for others by drawing that defender too. So that's a new wrinkle in his offense that we did not see prior to the hiatus. What's the expectation for Tice as far as his ability to stay with Bam? Because of that flexibility, because of Bam's passing, Tice a pretty solid defender. But how do you see that one playing out? Because I feel like that's a pretty huge matchup going into the series.
I think the Bam Adebayo matchup is the biggest. I think Bam and I think Jay Crowder are two keys. Bam is obviously going to be tough to guard. It makes Cantor, again, probably unplayable. Because I can't imagine how much they would attack Cantor as in because he has to drop so much in pick and rolls. So he has to drop, but you still have the ability to go over the top to Bam, even if Cantor drops. So he's out. Tice has had a propensity to foul. In fact, in Boston, we call it the war on Tice.
Yeah, I saw that.
he's constantly called for fouls. It's wild. They see every single foul that he commits. Somehow, some way, he doesn't get away with anything. So that is going to be something that he has to avoid. And I don't know if that's going to make him tentative, but he has to be able to get up there and defend, but defend those roles and defend him at the rim. But with Bam, it's just going to be like everything else. It's going to take more than one guy to defend this Miami Heat team. It's going to take more than one guy to defend Bam Adebayo because of all of the versatile things that he can do. He can initiate the offense. He brings the ball up the court. You know, like that's a lot. You're asking a lot of Daniel Tice to cover him. And then you got to throw a different look at him, maybe with Robert Williams. But even like, I don't know how Robert Williams is going to fare because Bam is strong. So then you have to put Grant Williams in there, who's a rookie and strong enough maybe to deal with Bam, but not quick. And Bam is quick. So, and he's taller. He can shoot over the top of Grant Williams. So it's going to take a lot of help to really try to neutralize him. The only hope I think that the Celtics can have is honestly trying to funnel more offense through Adebayo to try to take it out of the hands of some of the other guys that can kill you from beyond the arc. Like, try to make Adebayo the main offensive threat and almost bait him into trying to be the main offensive threat and not overreacting to that and staying home on the shooters. It's almost like you're kind of guarding Giannis in a way that he's going to do what he does. You can't go too crazy overreacting to him. You just got to make sure that he's one dimensional and you stay home on the shooters to neutralize that advantage. I'm mostly worried about the shooters. So I'm trying to figure out how do we keep Robinson and Hero and Dragic and Crowder and all of these guys, Olynyk off the bench hitting these threes. I'm more worried about that because that's how things can get away from the Celtics. So defending Adebayo opens things up for those guys. So don't go too crazy overreacting to him and just kind of see if Tice can kind of handle it one-on-one and just give a little bit of help, but like jab at him, almost like they defended Joel Embiid in the first series, where every time he had the ball and every time he put the ball on the floor, jab at him, make it a little uncomfortable for him with the dribbling, but jab and step away, you know, make it uncomfortable, dig at the ball, and then get back to your guy. So you're not, you know, make it seem like you're coming to help and help a little bit, but just try to make it as uncomfortable as you can for him, then get right back to your guy and make sure that shooter doesn't get a clean look.
Is there a matchup that you think the Celtics can exploit? Because I'm not just, I mean, Walker, I think we saw him struggle against the Toronto series. And that's been my biggest concern is that he is so good in pick and roll. And with Goron defending him, I think that's a huge potential series that he can be a really dynamic scorer, obviously, but he can really change the course of the series in Boston's favor. So that's the matchup that I am most concerned about from the Miami Heat side. I'm also a little concerned with, honestly, I thought Cantor would be a factor. I know defensively he's going to have his issues, but he's always had a knack for burning Miami, whether he was even on the Knicks. He's just always been very good at being able to get those points around the rim because with Bam Adebayo, he's not a designated rim protector. He's not a guy who can, you know, he's not going to block shots at a high level. He's more of a helper on defense. And so Cantor's going to get those points around the basket. So to hear that he's going to be mostly unplayable, I think it's a benefit for Miami, but I was a little concerned about him. Is there anything else that you see as a potential advantage for Boston as far as a direct matchup is concerned?
Well, I mean, if Brad Stevens decides to play Cantor, I guess we'll see, but I don't I think maybe I've just been scared away from Cantor minutes.
Sure.
The thing with Cantor, just to address that, is I think that whatever he gives you offensively, he takes away defensively. And that's why I think, I don't think Brad Stevens is going to want to make that trade-off. You don't want to run your offense through Cantor at all. I think the priority for the Celtics should be attacking Dragic, attacking Duncan Robinson, and trying to get trying to collapse a defense. Got to get Kemba Walker going early, and seeing if he can't get to the rim and start drawing some fouls, and maybe you can get Adebayo in some early foul trouble and get him off the floor that way. That would be a huge help. But my number one priority just coming into this is getting Kemba Walker going, and then you play off of that. You play Tatum off of the attention that's paid to Kemba Walker. You know, Tatum's going to be, it's going to be hard for him to get going because Crowder's going to be defending him. And it's going to be a big physical matchup. He could try to use his quickness on Crowder. It'll be interesting to see if they can try to take advantage, how they try to take advantage of Tatum's ability to drive. What kind of pick and roll type plays do they run? Do they run a high pick and roll with Tatum? Do they run a side pick and roll with Tatum? But my number one thing is get Kemba going, get him into his sweet spots, those pull up jumpers, or get him to the rim, get him on the free throw line, get him into a rhythm early, and then from there you see Jaylen Brown can get those catch and shoot threes in the corner, because you got to get into the middle of that Miami defense, especially if they're playing zone. You got to get to the 15 footer. You got to start knocking down some of those mid-range shots to soften up that defense, to just force that defense to come up. And then once you start hitting those 15 footers, then we can start looking at Jaylen Brown back cuts and stuff like that. So Kemba and his ability to hit that mid-range shot, that pull up from the free throw line, from the elbow, that has to be a priority. That has to be one of the number one things that they are trying to get, because that's going to be how you unlock scoring opportunities against the Miami defense.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you can look back to their previous matchup in the 2016 NBA playoffs when Walker was with the Hornets. And he had a huge series against Dragic. Dragic responded in kind. Obviously, they're both great scorers, very, very different. You can also see Dragic getting into a lot of foul trouble because Walker does have the propensity to sell fouls a little bit. Obviously, Marcus Smart does the same thing. I think that's a concern for a lot of Heat fans, because obviously we saw that in the series against Toronto, where Marcus Smart and Kyle Lowry, two guys that both effectively oversell contact very well. I think that's a huge issue, because we saw against Milwaukee where Dragic was whistled for a couple of really ridiculous foul calls where there was no contact whatsoever. And I think he's a guy who can be picked at, he can be targeted. Robinson as well. But the thing with Robinson is, if he's not having one of those incredibly explosive offensive nights, Spo will take him out of the lineup. Like, he'll start him in the first and third, and then we won't see him for the rest of the game. And that's perfectly fine, because Miami does have, I think anyway, greater depth than what Boston can contend with. And you pointed out Tyler Herro before. We haven't even talked about Andre Iguodala. We barely addressed Crowder. But, I mean, Miami does have a very deep team. And Olynyk, you know, you mentioned him earlier. He's had some huge games against his former team. So he's a guy who's dynamic as a playmaker. Obviously, consistency's always been a problem. But Bubble Kelly has been mostly very, very effective. He's been great. I think you probably would be happy to hear that, at least prior to this matchup, because he's been really, really solid. His shooting has been dynamic. The Bucks had no response for him. There were moments there where he was inserted as a backup, and he was initiating offense, bringing the ball down court, and they had their whole Bucks defense scrambling. Like, they could not stop Olynyk as a playmaker, and his ability to spot up as well as he has been in Orlando has been phenomenal. So he could be a real danger for the Celtics.
Yeah, it would be painful to get burned by Kelly Olynyk. Just after watching Kelly Olynyk have like some of these monster games out of nowhere, to have him come in and play well against the Celtics, there'll be a whole lot of, where was that in Boston? Coming from Celtics fans. Yeah, look, that bench is going to be a problem. But I think what we're seeing from the Celtics is the Celtics aren't going to reach too deep into their bench. They have guys that they can go to. Maybe, you know, Stevens throws the test balloon out there. Said, does Semi Ojeleye have it tonight? Does Brad Wanamaker have it tonight? Which big has it tonight? Rob or Grant Williams? There are guys that they can turn to, but the majority of the minutes are going to go to their best four or five players whenever Gordon Hayward returns and whatever he's capable of playing. So it's almost like two different teams that the Celtics are going to throw out there. The one with Hayward and the one without Hayward. And I think obviously without Hayward, the Celtics are going to have a much tougher time. But when Hayward comes back and if he's able to at least give them, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes, depending on what he's able to do with his, cardio wise, that can significantly change the series. But dealing with Miami's depth and, like you said, Crowder, I think is going to be huge in this game just because his ability to guard Tatum and he's back to hitting these threes. You've got options off the bench. Kendrick Nunn, you kind of got away from Kendrick Nunn, but he's good. Like there are a lot of good players on this team. So it's going to be difficult. I think this is going to be a tough series. This is going to be another, I think, seven game kind of classic. I think we're going to see a similar fight like we saw with Celtics and the Raptors.
Yeah, I don't know about Nunn. I wouldn't just to touch on that. I don't know that we're going to get a lot of playing time from him. Like he started to get some more minutes in the Milwaukee series, but I think there's still concerns about what he brings to the table. Obviously, after the COVID diagnosis, he has not been at 100%, but it seems to have magnified whatever flaws in his game. It's exposed the player who he was. Like he's limited, he's one dimensional in that he's a very good offensive player. And then he tends to struggle as a defensive player. Although we saw shades of some really good defensive activity from him, which we had not seen prior to the hiatus. And then as a playmaker, he's also struggled a little bit because he's going to pound the ball. He's going to try and look for his shot first and foremost. And I think that's where, Miami's offense can get a little bogged down. Now he's been inserted mostly as a guy to help ignite the offense or provide a spark when maybe, against Milwaukee, we saw Wes Matthews targeting Jimmy Butler and stayed with him and hounded him so completely where it almost made Butler a non-factor. I mean, he had that huge game one, but that was mostly in the second half. Then he had a big game three. And other than that, he was pretty quiet, largely. He had a couple big shots here and there. If there's an edge to Butler, it's that I think he can get to the line a lot more than anybody on Boston's roster. So that's certainly a factor. But, again, to tie it to the Nunn point, if Butler's limited somehow because of Boston's depth, because of their wing versatility, then maybe you'll see some minutes from Nunn to kind of get in there and provide a spark. But overall, I'm not sure. I think that's a role now that Spoelstra feels much more comfortable going to with Tyler Hero. He's a guy who can make plays. He's gone much better and continued his evolution as a playmaker over the course of the season. It feels like with the hiatus, and you kind of hinted at it before, as far as Crowder and Iguodala and incorporating them into the lineup, with Hero, he put in so much work during the hiatus that this is almost like his second season, and he's taken a huge leap, not just as a scorer, but as a playmaker. His defense can still be exploited, but he's a really, really good shooter. He comes up and big in the clutch. He's not shying away from those moments. So he's absolutely a threat to get a shot down with a shot clock or, again, in the waning moments of a game. Look to him to be a big offensive punch for Miami.
Yeah, I'm kind of afraid of Hero off the bench. Like I said before, I'm more afraid of the shooters. I'm more afraid of a barrage of three-point shooting. I'm more afraid of the Celtics working really hard defensively, but then overhelping and not getting back and seeing the game get away from them in a, here comes a Hero three, then a Robinson three. And he's like, boom, boom, boom. You're like, Celtics are just down two. And all of a sudden it's a 14-point game. And that's where I think the Celtics have to be conscious of how they are defending the Jimmy Butler drives, the Dragic drives, the Adebayo attacking of the hoop. Like the thing about Miami is they've got so many guys. They've got guys who do like the very different things. Like Butler's going to get to the rim more than anybody. Adebayo is going to put pressure on the rim. Dragic can get you in the mid range, and then you've got all of these shooters. Got to be careful about overreacting to something that's happening and letting the other part of the game open up. So that's why I said earlier, I think maybe the best strategy, if we're picking poison here, the best strategy is to put it on Bam Adebayo and see if they can turn him into the number one option and take away from all of the other things that can hurt them. It's not the best, but again, it's the conference finals. And there shouldn't be an easy strategy for facing a team in the conference finals. You're just going to have to hope that you put enough on one of their guys and see if that's enough. I fully expect the Heat to let Daniel Tice shoot as much as he wants. Like that's going to be one of their strategies, and not let Kemba go off and Tatum go off and Jalen catch and shoot and go off. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. But I think the 3-point shooting, we just saw it. This is in the NBA. 3-point shooting wins. Like that's the thing, and that's what you got. So that makes Miami like I'm not comfortable with this series at all.
Yeah. Similarly, I mean, it's, you hinted at it before. It's going to be a great series. I can't wait for it to get started. Look, I did this with Locked On Bucks. I did this with Locked On Pacers. Do we even bother going into prediction territory here? Do you feel comfortable making a pick at this point?
Look, I feel like I'll say Celtics in seven as a total cop out because I think this is going to go seven games, but I'm not comfortable with that prediction at all. Not at all. Look, Miami is really good, and they've been the team that's benefited the most from all of this. This is kind of a perfect situation for them. I don't think if this was just a regular playoff series with home court and no hiatus, I wouldn't be worried about this series much at all. But the circumstances are what they are, and Miami's benefited. And suddenly I'm like, oh, this is tough. This is tough.
It is. Yeah, look, I'm only making this prediction because I'm superstitious and I've made it for the first two series. I'm going to say Heat in six. I don't necessarily think it's going to go that route, but at least publicly, that's the prediction I'm making. So not a knock or a slight to Boston whatsoever. I tweeted this out a couple days ago and got some heat from, no pun intended, from the fan base. But I was not looking forward to the Celtics matchup. I thought the Raptors would be a lot more easy for the Heat to handle. Yeah, so it's going to be great. I really am looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun, and this is it does have all the makings of an all-time classic series, so it should be a really good one.
That was a good conversation with me and Dave. Hope you go and subscribe to Locked On Heat because you want to know what the other side is saying throughout this series. So go give the Miami Heat, the Locked On Heat podcast, a follow. Dave's a good guy, and he deserves to have you follow his show. And subscribe to his show. I hope those of you who are new here can subscribe as well. Follow the show on Spotify. This show exists wherever podcasts exist, so please subscribe. As always, the rest of you, a good written rating, a 5-star review would be amazing, awesome. I love it. Share the podcast. Tell your friends that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.